All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. A busy hour, and lots of you very motivated to text in. We do appreciate that. There's one thing I wanted to mention, though, before I get to those comments, because our series of Lunchtime Lives on Facebook continue today. We are coming to you live on our Facebook page. That's Highland Hub. From Deirdre's at the Diamond in Carn Donagh, we'll be covering all things fashion, from the latest seasonal trends to must-have wardrobe essentials. We've got experts' tips and exclusive looks from Deirdre's collection, and we want you to get involved as always. So feel free to watch it live and send your questions during the Facebook Live, and you'll get your answers there and then. So don't miss it. Join us at 1 p.m. on Facebook. That's Highland Hub, Highland Radio's Lunchtime Lives from Deirdre's at the Diamond. Okay, so we were speaking to a childcare provider a little earlier on. It's off the back of a comment from a parent whose child came back from childcare, and the child was wearing nail polish, and another was wearing hair clips. And I think it was the mom that contacted us, but it was the dad that was upset about it. And they say, "I strongly feel that play school should not be the place for this and should not happen until agreed by us parents." Now, I just want to preface this, that any adults that want to do whatever they want, it's important that people are supported and are happy and content and are accepted in society. The one thing, and I think this important is this discussion is important, and I think our SPHE discussions are important as well, is to make sure we know what's going on and that we believe it to be the right thing. So one scenario might be, say for an example, because it comes up in this program from quite a lot, I would have done quite a bit of research in the area of transgenderism between the Enoch Burke trial and conversations about puberty blockers and gender affirming stuff. It's something I would be across quite a lot of, which means also reading testimony from people who are transgender and sort of to learn about their life and their life story. Because how can you chair a conversation unless you have some understanding from all different directions? And the one thing that comes out quite a lot, and it's the argument that's made as to why someone is trans and was born trans, and it's often male to female, is that I knew from a very early age, from 2, 3, or 4, I like to dress up in my mother's, I like to use my mother's makeup, I like to dress up in women's clothes. So that's often used as, that's often stated as confirmation that this was a person's born gender. Also, another thing, and as I say, this is just a question I have, and I'm not saying I'm anti this or otherwise. I'm just proposing this, and I would love to have a conversation and to learn and get educated. As you would know, and I'll focus on the lad's side of things, you know, as you get to a certain age, 12, 13, 14, a lot of changes happen in your body, and there's boosts of estrogen, and there's boosts of testosterone, and, you know, lumps can appear in certain places, if you get where I'm coming from, that are normally there in girls. And it can be quite a confusing time for young people. So are we sure that maybe if a young person, a young fella's in that stage, and maybe I'm doing trans people a disjustice here, because maybe that's not when they start feeling the way they feel, if they can lean back and then say, well, when I was 2 or 3 or 4, I used to wear lipstick, or sorry, I keep saying lipstick, I used to wear nail polish, I used to do my hair, I enjoyed that, so maybe that's who I am. And then they start making decisions, then they go and see a psychologist, then next thing you know, we're talking puberty blockers, gender-affirming name changes and stuff like that. As I say, that might not be typical of a trans person's journey. I understand that, and I'm very keen to hear all different points of view. But I also want to make sure that we look at things like that and ensure that when we think we're being helpful to kids and letting them grow and explore and be educational, that we aren't in any way doing them any damage. And I speak as a father on that, okay? Because I don't know the answers. But we trust almost blindly sometimes, we trust other people to have those answers and to make those decisions for us. But anyway, let's read some of your comments coming in. And there is a mix. I'm not sure if people who oppose this are more motivated to text or not. It seems most people are opposed to it. A caller says, "I'd be taking my child out of any creche that did this." I don't know what individual creche managers, what latitude they have, but it seems to be the curriculum that this is part of it. Another, "I don't care what the woman believes, there's a limit to mixed child play. Promoting and indulging in mixed gender play, which involves cosmetic feminization of male infants, is a no-no. Aside from the stereotypes debate, I think cosmetics of any description should not be applied to children in a childcare setting or school without their parents or guardian's prior consent. Another no childcare entity is the right to push the trans agenda on innocent kids, which is not what they're doing. And if we could, I would love if we could have this conversation maybe without going to the very extremes of the argument, because I don't believe there's any childcare provider pushing a trans agenda. I believe that this is the curriculum that they're following and they genuinely believe it's the right thing to do. But they're your words and I'll read on. No childcare entity has the right to push the trans agenda on innocent kids. There's a big difference in seeing mummy painting her nails, getting her hair done, and encouraging boys to do this, which they're not encouraging them either. It's downright dangerous to their mental well-being, regardless of regulations. Article 40, 44, Constitution protects the parents as the primary teachers for the children, not some woman with an agenda, and it could be a fella for that matter. If we, Johnny says, I want to break that window, it seems to be okay nowadays. These children are being led up the wrong path. Children should be taught what boys should do and girls should do. Children should be taught as they have no sense. Children don't have enough sense to know what is feminine and masculine. Another, if this was happening to my child, they would be taken out of school. Another, oh my God, this world is so messed up. It's the teachers that's putting the ideas in the wee children's heads. It's not right. Now, again, just to be clear, and this is across the board, not one childcare facility, and it may not be across the board. It's if a young lad comes up and says, I want to do that too. They're not sitting the boys down and saying, right, we're going to paint your nails. Again, if we really important that we have this conversation in the reality and not the extreme. But again, I'm followed by your texts. And I've never heard anything like this in my 64 years about gender. When we were growing up, there was no crap like this. This has gone too far. How did we grow up when we were young? Stop, for God's sakes, trying to rule children's lives. Let children be children. Where has all this come from? The world has gone mad. Another, teachers should get permission from parents first before they start painting wee boys' nails. Another, wee boys are only young fellas. What harm are they doing? I had sisters and we used to play together and do everything. Children should be able to play and do what they want. Children should be allowed to explore, says another listener. Another listener says, imagine pulling something away from a child and they start crying. We live in a bad enough world without giving out about what children play with. Well, I mean, I would say that there is two solutions to this. One is continue as we are and it for it to be inclusive. Don't bring feminism or masculism into that environment. Let them play with dolls, with tractors, whatever they want. Being a woman is not playing with a cooking set. Being a man is not playing with a tractor. Feeling like a woman, feel good about yourself is about putting makeup on, isn't it? It's about, for some women, or getting your nails done. So, I mean, I don't think the gender roles, i.e. we need more girls that are scientists, we need more girls that are engineers, and we need more fellas in healthcare, in caring roles, we need more fellas in different roles as well. What has that got to do with sort of nail polish and stuff? I don't know. I'm asking. I'm sure the wee boy's daddies, uncle, grandfather all go and get their nails painted. My wee girl loves tractors and has asked Santa for a tractor and trailer. We think nothing of it. Her dad is a farmer and she just loves the farm work. Parents overthink far too much these days. Again, I don't see. I think it's great that young kids don't necessarily follow gender stereotypes in toys that they play with or careers that they pretend to be. It's great if a wee girl wants to be an astronaut, and it's no harm if a young fellow wants to become a nurse. Is that the same as something that really doesn't define you in terms of what you can achieve in life? You know, putting your hair up and painting your fingernails. I know lots of women never paint their fingernails, for an example. My little boy wants to be a chef and neither of us are a chef. He sees it on TV. I think it's great that kids are open to every walk of life today. Yeah, indeed. And most chefs are actually men. I think it's disgraceful that childcare facilities would encourage this type of ideology. I'm so thankful that my child is not in childcare. And here comes this. Here it comes. Highland Radio are a woke station. Didn't cover anything on hate crime law. All gender ideology is law now. Greg is a useless presenter. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. We covered it extensively. If you want to come on and talk about it, that's fine. What they're actually referencing, because I do read this stuff, so I know what I'm talking about. The controversy in the hate speech that was passed yesterday as it relates to gender is the definition of gender. And by the way, it's politicians, the people that you vote for, that are voting for this, not me. And it outlines what the definition of gender is. So Section 3.2d specifies that gender means the gender of a person. The gender of a person, this is in our constitution, the gender a person expresses as the preferred gender, or the gender with which a person identifies. It includes transgenders and other genders other than male and female. And you can go into a list, how many genders are there? I think one politician said there were 9. So that's the controversy in that area. It's a protective characteristic if you want to identify as non-binary, for an example. Is that a gender? Anyway, so that's a protected characteristic. So that means you can't, in certain cases, you can't be hateful for someone, to someone. You can't be hateful to someone because they would identify as a gender other than male and female. So that's what the law provides for. But does that mean that you can't speak freely? It's been tested in Scotland, and we saw J.K. Rowling testing this in Scotland because they thought that in Scotland, as soon as similar laws were passed, that everyone would be locked up as soon as they expressed an opinion on gender or what have you. As it turns out, that that doesn't happen, because there's a constitutional protection. So you have the right to the freedom of expression. It's explicitly guaranteed under Article 40.6.1 of the Irish Constitution. And case law has established that this right includes the right to communicate facts, conversations, opinions and feelings. So your right to say, I don't believe there's any such thing as genders other than male and female. You are, and it's been defined in case law, you are legally protected to be able to say that if that is your view. If you say, I think we should go out and gather up and do bad things to everyone who's not male or female, you're not covered for that, right? You can express whatever, because the freedom of expression is not absolute. So people say, let's defend free speech. Article 40.6.1 already points out that freedom of expression is not absolute. So it allows for restrictions to the right to prevent the undermining of public order, morality, or the authority of the state. So you would have seen recently that someone was arrested for something they put on social media. I can't remember exactly what it was. I think they wrongly claimed that a person was interfering with children. That's not covered by the right to the freedom of expression. That goes beyond that, because that undermines public order, morality, or the authority of the state. The enjoyment of the right may also be limited where its exercise amounts to an abuse of rights. So in this case, that person may well have been arrested because their freedom of expression encroached on the rights of the person who was falsely accused. So that means that the freedom of expression doesn't go quite as far as that you can say absolutely anything, but you are still able to have an opinion, be critical, and what have you, express on anything that you want, unless it goes beyond what I've outlined. I'm not saying I support that, by the way. I'm just saying that's what was voted in, because I think there's an awful lot of conversation about what it means and what it doesn't mean. That all gets tested in the courts eventually, right? But anyway, that's what was voted on last night, much of it, the controversial bit, in and around gender. Okie doke, a random memory been triggered here from a listener. Greg, listening to your talk to someone about a black hole. When I was young and growing up, when you were drunk on the street, mostly men, the guards took you into a room to sober up. It was known as the black hole. That comes in from Maria. Do any of you have any memories of that? Or maybe you don't have the memory of it. I want to highlight why a taxi charged 15-year-old from Voodoo to Simpson shop at the hospital after 12 at night. I really think that's not normal, but happy the person got home safe. The girl had a Monaghan accent. I'm wondering if they charged extra due to her accent. These are students. The taxi driver knew that it was a student's night. Students should take a picture of the taxi number so that they don't get overcharged. Hi, Greg. Why is Donegal County Council doing works on Main Street in Buncrana on night shift? Yes, the works need done, but should not be priority. The main road leading into Buncrana from Cockhill is a disaster. Here's better roads leading into the bog. People's cars are destroyed. The road is that bad. This is what we pay tax for. I'd love to know who came up with this great idea, seeing that we are paying their wages. staying on the roads, driving into Letterkenny every day. There are people who don't know how to use traffic lights. I'm at the ATU at the moment, and college students are stepping out in front of cars. If the light is red, you can't go. Indeed, and it's very important that we all adhere to the traffic lights, be us motorists or pedestrians. Ireland is finished if we let Helen McEntee dictate our freedom of speech. Is a text that came in, and I outlined the provisions in that act. And as I say, I'm not endorsing it or what have you, but that's as it is laid out in the Constitution for you to make your own mind up. A caller says you can identify as whatever you want, but in reality, there are only two genders. Please ask a medical doctor to come on and talk about UTIs. That's urinary tract infections, is it? I presume it is. It is portrayed as a lady's problem. I'm on my seventh antibiotic due to UTIs, and I'm in my 70s. We need more information. Well, leave that with us. It's something, and that's exactly what we invite you to do, is give us suggestions, and we will follow up on that. Listening to you talk about that child coming home with nail polish on and hair clips. Honestly, I have two boys past preschool age, and if either of them arrived home from play school with nail polish, I would have been so annoyed. It is not their place to do things like that. That comes in from a man or listener. And an interesting one, actually, that came in from another person, and it relates to this issue, and it's just a different angle on it. Replay schools, honestly, I wouldn't be happy if my little girl came back with nail polish on. I'm not happy with the beautification of children. A bit of fun at home, but not at play school. Just my opinion. There's something else in relation to that that I don't disagree with on that, to be honest with you. And you see it an awful lot in adverts. I'll reference that later if I remember. Deputy Rory O'Murhu of Sinn Féin joins us on the programme now. Deputy, good morning to you. Thanks for your time today.
Morning, Greg.
Right, okay. You have been talking about the issue of justice, I suppose, following the murder of Private Sean Rooney by Hezbollah in Lebanon. Sean, of course, very strong Donegal connections. What is your understanding of progress in relation to getting justice for Sean and his family and also, you know, work colleagues?
Yeah, no, look, and in fairness, obviously, Sean would have very strong Dundalk connections, and the family would have huge connections with the Defence Forces. And look, it was obviously Sean's death is still felt, obviously, mostly by his family and his friends, but the wider community, and particularly, as you said, his colleagues in the Defence Forces. And look, we have had those promises, you know, from government around the fact that they would leave no stone unturned in relation to truth and justice. I will also accept circumstances have changed in Lebanon. Look, we've seen a huge escalation, obviously, down to what the Israelis are doing. You know, it's almost a deflection or a wider escalation of the genocide that's been carried out in Gaza. And obviously, none of this is helpful. I, like many, have been contacted, obviously, by those who have family out serving at the minute, and that's another issue we're dealing with. And it's also incredibly poignant.
Because Donegal, because we have our battalion here based in Finner Camp as part of the rotation is due to head out there shortly. So I'd be interested in that broader conversation. But just as it relates to Private Sean Rooney, is there a concern? I'm sure you have a concern, but are you getting government that justice may never be achieved for Private Sean Rooney's murder.
There's a huge concern, and the point I was getting it was just it's a lot more poignant, you know what I mean? Because Sean Rooney just showed us the risk that members of the Defence Forces are taking on a day by day basis out there and doing obviously that work in peacekeeping that we absolutely support. Look here, I got a parliamentary question back, and I may as well just use the words that Micheál Martin wrote to me, you know. Very disappointed to learn at the most recent hearing on the 7th of June that none of those indicted for the killing of Private Sean Rooney appeared in court at the hearing and that it was adjourned until the 12th of February 2025. I have continually stressed my unhappiness with progress of the trial to date, and I have made that very clear on a number of occasions directly to both Lebanese authorities and to the UN. and I continue to maintain close contact with both on this matter. We obviously need to make sure that that happens, and it happens in, you know, to the highest degree possible, because not only was the sacrifice made, you know, on behalf of those living in Lebanon, obviously on behalf of the defense forces and the wider UNIFIL operation, it's actually the UN has a certain element of responsibility here also. We also have the issue that you've seen in the public domain in the last while around the coroner not being happy with the information from the UN. And I don't think that that's acceptable in any way, shape or form. And one of my colleagues got a parliamentary question back in relation to this. And look, this issue is that serious. Like I brought it up yesterday, you know, with the Taoiseach, because I think it's something that has to be maintained on the agenda. You know, with all the powers the government doesn't have, the government has to use absolutely every tool and to follow through on what it made a promise, you know, obviously to the family, but, you know, to the wider community in relation to the fact it would leave no stone on.
Given that
is the case. I would be very worried myself. See, in relation to what you've seen, that you've seen people not showing up at court, that you've seen people released, and sometimes the Irish government only being told afterwards about it. None of it is in any way acceptable.
Of course, listen, given the fact that Hezbollah were responsible for this, and given the fact that Israel are incredibly active in Lebanon at the moment and targeting Hezbollah, and the fact that it's possible, I don't know, it's possible that maybe these defendants, these accused, had pagers on their person, or had the walkie-talkies that exploded. I don't know. Is it not possible or indeed probable that perhaps these people will never be able to be brought to justice because they might be killed as part of this Israeli operation?
Well, look, in relation to any of that, that's information we don't have. I think the fact is the only information we have is that nobody actually appeared in court and that the date has been put back into February 2025. That's all we know. See if there's any information. You know, obviously the Irish government should do their absolute best in relation to finding that out. But at this point in time, we don't have, and all we have seen is a court system that does not seem to be progressing from a point of view of justice. And we need to make sure that we maintain whatever tools we have. And as I say, particularly with the UN, because the UN has a responsibility. Like, Sean Rooney died on UN operations. And then beyond that, we need to make sure that that information that the coroner is looking for, that the family are absolutely frustrated around, needs to be provided. So it needs to be incredibly strong words, incredibly strong interactions with the UN, because none of this is good enough. And also, as you said yourself, Sean's colleagues and comrades would obviously expect that the Irish government would do that. And beyond that, we need to make sure that all the information is provided, that and we know there are issues that are in the public domain, and we need to make sure that best protocols and best practice are going to be followed through, particularly we'd like to think that that would be the case at the moment. And if there was anything to be learned from the tragedy that was the death of Sean Rooney, that would be being employed as best practice at this moment in time, you know, in relation to what is an incredibly serious circumstance in South Lebanon. And look, you spoke about the fact of Israeli targeting, but the Israelis have targeted at this stage UNIFIL positions, and obviously utterly unacceptable. But it also just shows the absolute seriousness that our peacekeeping troops are under at this point in time. And we need to make sure that there are proper lines of communication to them, and obviously to those in command, but also beyond that, we need to make sure that there's a free flow of information from
just
the
in relation
UN
to
what
that
the possibilities
given
are.
Okay, I can't
and
ask a if question.
We don't have a free flow of information in relation to what a coroner is looking for as regards an inquest, well, I don't think that's good enough.
No problem. That's where we have to leave it. I want to thank you for your time this morning. Thank you very much indeed. And we'll follow that with great interest, as you can imagine. Okay, take care. That's Deputy Rory O'Morahu of Sinn Féin there, raising that very important issue in the Dáil. Back to some of your comments here now. I think it's wrong to paint boys' nails at that age and put clips in their hair. That lady said they're not being forced. These are 3- and 4-year-old children, sure they will agree to anything. Must be lots of other things you could do with 3- and 4-year-old boys rather than paint their nails and put clips in their hair. That's just my opinion. More coming in relation to that. It's not about a wee boy who had his nails painted, says a listener. It's wrong, full stop. What's next? He'll come home with makeup. Fits them better to teach the kids good manners, the ABCs or 1, 2, 3s, how to sit and listen to a story being read instead of this crap, as they describe it. Now, I know myself, all of that stuff does happen as well. This is another element of the teaching. But they go on to say, I think it's okay to allow play, but spa days? Go do what we done when we were at play school. Learn about nature, storybooks, painting pictures, playing with Play-Doh instead of stupid spa days. Another, why is it necessary to have nail polish at play school at all? That's the problem in the world today. Children are not being let be children. There are plenty of activities, games and toys to keep them amused and keep nail polish for mum, dad or family members to be done in the home setting. Another, if I heard Therese had my son wearing a skirt or putting on nail varnish while his parents were not informed, I'd do everything in my power to make sure it didn't happen. Now, there was no reference to skirts, by the way. But I take your point. Any comments in relation to that, keep them coming into us, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Just a quick request, would you please wish my son a happy 18th birthday today, CJ Shields. Happy birthday, CJ. It's all ahead of you now. That comes in with lots of love from your mum. Okay, we're all looking forward to Halloween. Most of us are. All of us in different ways, and we all want our children to be involved with it. Some of us don't, but it can be more complicated for many, many, many others. Life's complex, isn't it? But we want to be as inclusive as we can be on this programme. And with that in mind, we've invited John Joe McGinley, founder of Autism Dad, onto the show. John Joe, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to all your listeners, and thank you for having me on.
Yes, now this is about not being party poopers, but just understanding that many of us are different, and to be as inclusive as possible. Halloween and autism, what does Halloween and autism really mean, I suppose? And it's different for different people, don't get me wrong, but you're the expert in this area.
Oh yeah, firstly I want to say I sort of reiterate what you've said. I'm not wanting to be a party pooper in any way. I've got 4 boys, 2 on the autism spectrum, and they all enjoy Halloween, but you need to take preparation to allow them to enjoy Halloween, because let's face it, Halloween's a fantastic time. It's really expanding out. We've got all the costumes, we've got the bright lights, we've got the decorations, we've got the parties, we've got the discos. It's a far cry from my time in Scotland when all we did was duke for apples and have a few monkey nuts. But it's really expanded out. But for children on the autism spectrum, it can present a lot of challenges. You know, you've got challenges such as the sensory issues, the bright lights, the noise. You've got even the sensory aspects of the costumes. It's like simple little things like if you're putting a mask on, it encloses the face. You know, that can have an impact on themselves, but as they experience it on others, they can't really, some of them can't fathom why has that person changed? You know, you've also got the anxiety of the build-up to the process. A lot of it is built by sometimes social pressure, even peer pressure, because as they see their schoolmates dressing up for Halloween, a lot of them, one, do they understand it, and two, it's not something that they really want to get involved in. Yeah. So you have to guide them through it.
So I mean most parents, guardians will understand that, and their property, they'll know what works for their children and what doesn't, and they can make those adaptations and what have you. So where does the sort of wider consideration come into it? You know, is it in terms of how we dress our houses, how we open the door? Is it if there are local events to maybe make some adaptions to make them more autism friendly? So sort of outside of your own family home, and I'm trusting parents know what's what there, you know, what can society do to make events more inclusive?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think the most important thing that anybody could do, any event or any local group that's there, is when you're having a Halloween event, to think of the issues of those on the autism spectrum, those sensory issues, the anxiety. And the best thing they could have is a safe, quiet space where kids can go off when it just gets too much for them. You know, it doesn't mean that the event's ended for them or it's over. It's just a place where they can go. It can either with their parents or if you've got a suitably qualified individual there who can supervise the children, where they can just have a quiet space when they can start to regulate themselves and get themselves ready to go and start playing again with their friends. It doesn't mean the evening's over for them or the event's over for them, but that little time out allows them to just have that safe and inclusive environment that allows them to regulate themselves.
Yeah,
and themselves,
I think that's really important because that covers all, not all, it covers most, doesn't it? Because, of course, a lot of the, it's quite affordable now for, you know, these noisy, scary witches and what have you, and mostly they have flashing eyes and all that type of stuff. And for some children, they can cope and manage with that for a period of time or what have you. So it's not about necessarily removing that stuff. As you say, it's about maybe allowing the experience to continue, but in a more, a different, calmer environment without the sort of sensory overloads or stuff that might trigger anxiety.
It's that key word, Greg, there, the sensory overload. And a lot of children, when they get that sensory overload, it just overwhelms them. But even 5, 10, even 15 minutes in that safe, quiet environment, they get that self-regulation and they're ready to go again. Because you want children to experience Halloween with their friends and to experience all the fun that's there. And it doesn't take much, just to, if you're planning an event, be it in a community hall or anywhere else, just to make sure, let's have a think about the needs of the children on the autism spectrum and have that safe, quiet environment where parents or even children can just go away for a few minutes just to self-regulate themselves and get themselves ready to enjoy the night with their friends.
Mm. I read somewhere about an initiative whereby, you know, trick-or-treating is still a big thing, that trick-or-treaters with autism might carry blue buckets or something. I'm not sure if that was, I didn't read deeply into the article. Is that a thing?
It is a thing.
Okay, talk to us about
Two things you can do. One, if you're expecting trick-or-treaters, you can actually have the blue pumpkin there to warn people and just to tell people, hey, this is an autism-friendly house, which is great for the people who are coming. And also, you've got to take into account a lot, trick-or-treating, right? If you look at children on autism spectrum, a lot of them suffer from social anxiety and they have difficulty with social interaction. Let's face it, trick-or-treating is one of the ultimate social interactions. You're knocking sometimes on strangers' doors asking for trick or treat. So again, it can be overwhelming for children. One of the key ways to get around that is to obviously use social stories to prepare for them. But again, having that little wee blue badge you can get off the internet, the blue pumpkin there, that can then warn people and say, listen, this child is on the autism spectrum. Just handle with care, really.
We often
as extensive as you possibly can.
Quite rightly, John Joe, our conversations often about, you know, the young people or the older people, you know. How important, as a parent, how important is it that your child can engage as much as possible with all other children? And to sort of, you know, and that could all children be with a disability or autism or whatever it might be. I'm just curious from a parent's perspective, how important is it that, you know, your child can be seen to be enjoying as much as possible everything else that other children can enjoy?
Well, that is the key point as a parent. You want your child to have friends, to participate in as many events as possible. And part of that is planning and working with them to give them the emotional support to allow them to do that. Yes, children on the autism spectrum may suffer from social anxiety. Yes, they may have speech and language issues, but parents should never give up. It's all about making sure that our children can participate in the same events as neurotypical children can. And that's all about preparation and working with them, because you don't want your children to miss out. And again, a little tip I would give to some other parents, you know, one of the key things that all children enjoy, the last day of school, they're all dressing up in their Halloween outfits. You know, don't be distressed or disappointed if your child doesn't want to dress up. You can even do it in little stages. One of my little boys, right, he never used to want to dress up. And we had to take it in stages. The first thing was, would you like your face painted? Yeah, I'll go with that. And then the next time is, yeah, well, you've agreed to do your face painting. Why don't you put your favourite outfit on? And it might even be that it's just want the top on and not the trousers. You just have to build up, and they still participate. And they
but
still
that's useful too, though, John Joe, isn't it? It's useful beyond just that experience of dressing up for Halloween, I presume, because you're tooling yourself up. You learn sort of how to communicate with the younger person, how to encourage them and bring them forward. Because that's not, you know, I talked a little earlier on that moms and dads and guardians would know exactly what to do with their own children in their own house, but there is no rule book, I suppose, and everybody's learning. And there is a big, I think it's on your website, is there a topic on autism and Halloween that I think parents that might find useful to read through? Did that come from, I have it in here in front of me, John Joe, did that come from your website?
That autism, autismdad.ie, yeah. That's
yeah, okay.
My
I mean, it's a great resource. As I said, I kind of presumed everyone knows everything earlier on, but I'm still learning. Three kids deep, how to raise a child. now it's got to the stage where the kids bloody think they can teach us. Anyway, come here. I'm going to use your words. It's all about having a happy and spooky, stress-free Halloween.
It is indeed. And as I say, every child is different. So what I've tried to do is in the blog, on the website, autismdad.ie, is put together some hints and tips that me and my wife, Eileen, have learned over the years with two of our boys in autism spectrum. Some of them work. They might not work for other people, but hey, give them a try. And let's try and make sure that our kids enjoy Halloween as much as everybody else.
Exactly. And John Joe, we're a week out for Halloween. I just want to thank you for being a good sport and wearing your scary mask early. Thank you. Oh, no, it's not. That's your...
Well, that's me, actually. Thanks very much, Greg.
I think I've talked to you enough to maybe slightly get away with that one. Very handsome man, and I'm only joking. So let's have fun. Let's be as inclusive as is possible. And sure, look, at it's a great thing. And do you know what? The thing I've noticed, John Joe, communities are recognising a lot of this stuff, and I see
I see
lots of events and autism-friendly spaces being mentioned. Isn't it great that, yes, you can keep campaigning, yes, we need to get the message across, but you see events in various little communities here and there and everywhere, and they're taking this into consideration, and I love that. Or special accommodations for children with a disability. You know, we're really, I think, we can never stop moving forward, John Joe, but I really find it so encouraging to see, you know, the initiative being shown by many communities across our beautiful region.
And it's brilliant. People are good. And what they're doing is they are really taking on board the message. But that doesn't mean that the message will stop. We'll keep fighting for our children virtually to our last breath, because we have to. But I want to thank everybody that's putting together these fantastic inclusive events.
It's brilliant stuff. Okay, well, I could end up chatting to you before Halloween if I don't have a lovely time. Thank you so much, John Joe. Take care of yourself. Just remind us that website one more time. It's very simple.
AutismDad.ie.
Yeah, and there's a great article been written by John Joe there in relation to all of this. Take care, John Joe. Thank you so very much indeed. All right, I do have to take a quick break. Claire, sorry for holding you. Good morning to you.
Hi there, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. And I think you're approaching this conversation about painting of nails and what have you from a broader perspective, in that are you of the view that they shouldn't be in these environments at all, be it for boys or girls?
Well, I'm just wondering how safe they are. I'm not a parent, so I have no skin in that game. I'm somebody who grew up on tractors, so, you know, I'm all for everybody experimenting with everything. But just from a health and safety point of view, I know that I have asthma, and I always have a terrible time with the fumes from nail polish. And I just wondered if it's actually safe to have them around children. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a simple question, one we'll explore. Listen, Claire, short and to the point and on topic. Thank you so very much indeed. Quick break, then the news at 11.